everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations, where we talk about mental health, adversity, spirituality, and societal issues. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia. And join me in this week's episode with a special guest, a seasoned family law attorney, Seth Nelson. In this insightful episode, we dive deep into the key considerations when going through a divorce and discovering invaluable insights on mindful co-parenting. Seth Nelson is a recognized expert in family law. He shares his wealth of knowledge to empower listeners with essential information about the divorce process, from legal nuances to emotional well-being. This episode covers pretty much all of it, ensuring you are well prepared for the challenges that may arise during this critical life transition. The reason why I wanted to do this episode is often we forget the importance of how we need to show up, our emotional regulation, and if we are parents, the co-parenting aspect when it comes to divorce. In this episode, Seth and I discuss the importance of putting children first and offer strategies to navigate co-parenting with grace and resilience. Seth Nelson is a Tampa-based family lawyer known for devising creative solutions to difficult problems. Seth has said, "I've been through a divorce and have a teenager. As difficult as the divorce process can be, especially when there are kids involved, things will get better." From an early age, he has always wanted to help people. After law school, he found that he could do the greatest good by helping people through one of the most difficult times of their lives. Being a divorcee himself, as well as a father, he understands what people are going through when it comes to divorces. While focusing on Florida divorce law, Florida family law, and Florida family law mediation at the office, Seth wanted to continue helping people outside of his own jurisdiction, so he started up his own podcast, How to Split a Toaster, a divorce podcast about saving your relationships, which I also had the honor of being on as a guest. Please check out the show notes on all the ways you can find Seth or NLG Divorce and Family Law online. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review or a comment in the comment section. That always helps. And a brief word for our sponsors. So I would like to talk about deodorants because I'm tired of constantly replenishing my deodorant and then having to worry about disposing those plastic containers. There's a solution for that. Wild. Wild provides a eco-friendly, all-natural deodorant with a sustainable design. They provide a four-life aluminum case. For me, they sent me a personalized case with my name on it. And did I mention you can customize your orders and have these refills delivered straight to your door? This is an all-natural solution where there's no aluminum in the product, just in the case. Go to wearewild.com and use code EASY at checkout for 25% off your first order. All right, Seth, welcome to the Easy Conversations podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I know you've got a pretty busy schedule, so I appreciate you taking the time. So I'm really excited to have this conversation with you for many reasons. There's a huge stigma, first of all, at least I've experienced it through my own personal journey around divorce. And then there's this after the fact, what do you do? And there's this whole aspect of, okay, well, within family law, it's not always clear what people's rights are, but I wanted to uncover some of these things with you and help the listeners understand what are some things they can do if they're going into a divorce and then coming out of one. And we've had the chance to talk offline a little bit around the work you do. But before we get into that conversation, I do want to give you an opportunity to share with the listeners what it is that you do and where you're based and all of that fun stuff.
Well, thanks for having me. Excited to be here and talk about this topic. Seth Nelson. I'm a divorce attorney in Florida. My main focus of my practice is in Hillsborough County, Tampa Bay area, and the surrounding counties, but I do litigate and consult on cases all over the state and sometimes over the country. Really, what we try to do here is just bring forth our best work by educating our clients. Sometimes in court, we like to educate the general public through our own podcast on how to split a toaster, a divorce podcast about saving your relationship. So thrilled to go through all these questions for you and your listeners, and hopefully they'll have a couple good takeaways.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess right off the bat, understanding why is this whole process of divorce so difficult, right? I mean, you hear people when they're married, they're like, oh, we would never go through that. We would never have that animosity towards each other. But there's something about the process, especially when it comes to finances, that really turns people against each other. Why do you see, or at least what do you see in the work you do with a lot of people, and why does this happen?
Well, the first thing to understand is, unlike other litigation type cases where there might be some emotion involved, mm-hmm. in a family law case, it is ripe for an emotional divorce that is proceeding. So you are always going through two divorces when you're going through a divorce. The mm-hmm. first is the emotional divorce, which you might have been doing a long time before the legal divorce actually starts. Because right. divorce it's made up, right? It mm-hmm. is by statute and laws, and you have to go to court. And but that legal process can take anywhere from 18 months or longer. Maybe you can get done between 6 and 18 months. Mm-hmm. That would be great. I've had some that happen very quickly, but for the most part, it takes time. It takes time to gather the financial information that you need. It takes time for your lawyer to do an analysis. If you're going to go to a mediation where you have a third party neutral trying to help you settle the issues, they don't decide the issues. They try to help you sell the issues, mm-hmm. and you're going to a good one. They might be booked 2 or 3 months out. So if it takes you 3 months to get the documents and do the analysis, another 3 months to get on the calendar, you're at 6 months.
Right.
Now, it's always shifting sands. Somebody says something that sets somebody off during the process. They're not being forthcoming with information. They had a job, but they lost their job. They were unemployed, but now they're employed, but the spouse thinks they could be making more money, not mm-hmm. what they're doing. So people are just at each other's throat. And I think a lot of that comes from hurt feelings. Hurt emotions, scared. People are scared that they're not going to have the lifestyle they had before. They won't be able to live. So mm-hmm. it's all wrapped up into what we call, quote unquote, a divorce.
Right. And just a couple of things to unpack there. So you mentioned that often, you know, that divorce, the emotional divorce could actually happen before the legal proceeding of it. And that could often also happen just for one party, right? So the other party's playing catch up. And that, for them now, they're not only going through the legal process, but they're also going through that emotional process. And irrespective of when it started for you, you're emotionally attached, right? To your point, if it's taking 18 months, that's 18 months of your life that you're really focused on this one thing that's taking up so much of your emotional bandwidth and your energy, and it's hard for you to focus on other things. So I guess a long-winded question here, but for, you know, whether you started the process in your mind earlier than your partner, for example, but then also coming out of it after the fact, if it's taken you 18 to 24 months, there's a lot of recovery that needs to happen, right? And what do you see with people and how are they able to navigate it? Because a lot of the times this big setback in people's life can set them completely back. And it's hard for people to come out of it or crawl out of it and then start fresh.
Well, there's two parts to that. And I think you raise a very good point, is that maybe the emotional divorce doesn't start at the same time for the parties.
Yeah.
So let's just take divorce aside for a minute. Let's mm-hmm. just say you're on a first date.
Yeah.
It went well. You go on a second date and the guy asks you to marry him. Mm-hmm. That's going to be probably too early in this day and age.
Right.
For a marriage proposal. Okay. And what I mean by that is you're just not at the same spot emotionally as the other is. And that's going to be like, whoa, what's happening? To your point, the same thing can happen. It usually takes about 3 years from the time someone first thinks in their mind divorce until they're actually calling a lawyer. So if you're blindsided by it, you've been out there doing whatever you think you were supposed to do in the relationship, or yeah, we're going through some rough times, but everyone goes through rough times. We'll get through it, but you don't actively do anything to get through it. Yes, that is going to hit you like you just walked into a glass door. Then on the flip side, getting out of it, you can never finish your emotional divorce until at least your legal divorce is over. You just can't do it. It's impossible to get emotionally done until you're legally done. Now, once you're legally done, it might take a year, 2 years, 3 years, depends on how much work you do on yourself. If you're seeing mental health counselors, if you're seeing in therapy to say, hey, what went wrong? How do I get my life back? Who am I now? I was part of this couple for a long time and now I'm on my own. And what am I doing about the kids? So you got to do some hard work and take some time for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to come back to the added element of having children involved. But before that, you did touch on something as we were talking early on, that this whole construct, if you can call it that, of divorce is made up, right? So how do you navigate that where it's something that's made up? Because I don't know what would happen in ancient times when a couple decided to, I mean, you could probably move to another village and the other spouse would never know, right? So,
so,
how do you navigate this? Because there's a lot of animosity.
It's made up, but it's not a mystery.
Correct.
Right? There are statutes in every single state. There are laws about what you need to do when you get divorced or what the court will consider or how the court will substantively divide up your assets and debts. In Florida, the division of assets and debts is called equitable distribution. It's called other things in other states. In Florida, we have alimony. Most states call it alimony. Some call it spousal support. In Florida, we have child support. Pretty standard term across the country. Then you have everything else, attorney's fees, costs in the process. And the big one, of course, is parenting. All states do parenting plans differently. We call it time sharing on where the kid goes back and forth. Other states call it custody and visitation. So the thing to understand is if you think of the word peace, P-E-A-C-E, those are the five potential issues in your case: parenting plan, equitable distribution, alimony, child support, everything else. Check your local jurisdiction, get with a licensed attorney in your state that really focuses on family law and ask them the substantive questions. If I have a retirement account, how is that divided? If part of that account I had before we were married, how does that impact that? I make X number of dollars, she makes X number of dollars, or no money, or stay-at-home parent. How does alimony work? Ask the substantive questions and try to treat it like a business decision, because the real world on what you think is fair and accurate and the way the law should be most likely is not the way the law looks at it as fair and accurate and what the law should be.
And those are great things for people to note. I had to learn it the hard way. But there's also this notion where there is hesitation, could be on both ends or one end, where, oh, if I get lawyers involved, now I'm starting a war. This may go bad. But there is something to be said to speak to an expert, right? Like if you're feeling sick, you're going to go talk to a doctor to get some prognosis. Equally, if you're thinking of a divorce, it's worth talking to a lawyer. Maybe you don't need to get lawyers involved. To your point, there's other processes in place. There's mediation, there's arbitration, but there's a lot of fear around getting lawyers involved. And another thing I do want to ask you is, like, there's often a negative perception around lawyers, right? Like in Canada, I can't speak to the US, but you know, there's this whole notion that, oh, you get lawyers involved, they're going to drag it out just so they can fill their pockets.
Yep.
That's, throw that over to you.
You know, what do you say? What do you call 100 lawyers at the bottom of a swimming pool? A good start, right? I mean, we have those negative perceptions. We have those bad, those negative legal jokes, but there's a term for it. I lawyered up.
Yeah.
That's not a positive term. I lawyered up. So there is the impression. So this goes back to what is the lawyer's job? And when I'm representing a client and the other side does not have a lawyer yet, I always say, I hope they get a good lawyer. Right. And my client's like, why would you want that? Don't you want a bad lawyer that you can just run over in court? My answer is no. They're going to make it harder. They're going to drag it out. It's going to cost more in litigation costs and fees. And if I have a good lawyer, this is what I think a good lawyer is. One, they know the law. There'll be gaps that they'll have to research. That's what we do as lawyers. The law is always changing, but they know the law. They're settlement-minded. They're problem solvers, right? Because divorce is a big jigsaw puzzle that we have to solve. And what I mean by that is two people have been married for 15 years. They have commingled their lives and finances, and they have kids together. How do we divide that stuff up in a way that is allowed by law and that the parties will agree to?
Right.
And that doesn't always line up, right?
Yeah.
And a lawyer's job is to say, like if you came to me and say, my spouse and I have made a decision. Here's how we're going to divide anything up. I just need you to write it up.
Right.
Because it's a legal contract. I want to make sure it's accurate. Okay. And I'm looking at this and it's really not in your favor. Or the flip side, it's very favorable to you. Now, those are comparative terms, favorable, not favorable. So what am I comparing it to? I'm comparing it to what the law is. But nowhere in the law does it say when you settle your case, you have to do exactly what the law provides. It's just the opposite. If you want to give away the farm, so to speak, you can give away the farm. It's your farm to give away.
Right.
You're allowed to give your spouse the house and not ask for half the equity out of it. And you don't have to have a reason to do that. You might have an underlying reason like, look, it's in a great school district and I want the kids to stay there. It's the only way that they can afford the house.
Right.
And that is the only way we can keep the kids in this great school district. So you're allowed to make those decisions. The lawyer's job is to say, here's what you could get in court. Here's how much it will cost to get that in court. These are things that you would never have to give up in court. But ultimately, you're my boss. You're the decision maker. It's my job to make sure you're making an informed decision. It's not my job to stir the pot. It's not my job to tell you how you should settle your case.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And on the flip side, you know, when we were talking about emotions earlier, there's a tendency to get often, I guess the best word to describe it would be bitter or stubborn, where you get caught hung up on certain issues. And I find, you know, I think I was there at certain points in my process, but I see a lot of people get caught up where they're really fighting, spending dollars to get pennies back, right? And I think there's an aspect of practicality where you have to think through, okay, if I'm contesting a $3,000 issue, I'm going to end up paying my lawyer $6,000. Is this
makes
in the
no
best
sense.
Interest, right? But do you see a lot of that happening? And I guess probably in those cases, I would assume you're giving some counsel to your clients that, hey, this is not worth fighting over because it's going to cost you more in the long term.
I give that advice every day. And then this is what I hear back.
Yeah.
It's not the money. It's the principle. It's not the money. It's the principle. And I tell my client, now that you've said that, I will not ask you to settle on this issue anymore because your principles are your core beliefs. It's in your DNA. It's who you are.
Yeah,
I would never ask a client to settle on who they are. But I've got a question that I just have yet to figure out after practicing family law and people litigating over principles for over 16 years, being a lawyer for over 20. Why would you ever go to court over a principle? It's the core of who you are. If you go to court and win, all you're getting is a governmental employee has agreed with your principles.
Right.
And that governmental employee happens to be a judge. If you lose, a governmental employee did not agree with your principles or said, I agree with your principles, but the law doesn't apply to that fact or doesn't give you what you want. But if they just say, I don't agree with your principles, I have never once had a client say, you know what? I lost. and the judge didn't agree with my principles, let me reevaluate my principles. No, they say the judge got it wrong. Mm-hmm. Why are we going to court over principles? There's no logical basis to do so.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, again, what we've touched on is to be able to detach yourself from the emotions and perhaps look at it from, a logical sense, right? So to your point, there's a lot of variables you're banking on. Even if it's a principle-based choice, you're hoping the judge is having a good day or their subjective approach is similar to yours, or they align with your principles. But then in that case, even the law has to align with your principle, right? So yeah, getting people off of that is probably a difficult thing to do, I'm assuming.
Yeah, but it gets a little easier when you ask them for a very large fee retainer to go argue about their principles.
Absolutely.
And I tell them, pay for your kids' college, not for mine.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Let other people make bad decisions and pay for my kids' college. Don't be one of them.
Right. Right. I appreciate that. And again, touching on the kids piece, because I did want to come back to that, you know, we touched on the emotional divorce, the legal piece, but then there's also that family unit that for a lot of people, it's difficult even to make go ahead with the divorce, right? They may be unhappy in the marriage. Sometimes it's financial considerations that people fear and don't go ahead with a divorce, or it's the kids, right? I don't want to split up the family. I don't want to separate the time I have with my children. That is such a complex issue. And I'm assuming a lot of people get stuck there and don't go ahead with it. But if they do, that's another layer that we haven't really touched on, but I wanted to get your thoughts on.
Yeah, I hear it all the time. Difficulty. We stay together for the kids. Stay together for the kids. And what I hear from these parents who don't get divorced until their kids are in college, still mm-hmm. a hard time for them to get divorced because the kids mm-hmm. aren't around, right? And now when they come home for Thanksgiving, who do they see? It's different, right? Yep. Or when the kids are out on their own, they have their own families. Typically what kids say to those parents is, we knew you're unhappy. You should have done it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing to realize is you should live your life, not your divorce. And when you're talking to kids, don't let the divorce get in the way of being a parent. Mm-hmm. And here's what I mean. When you have to have the most difficult conversation you're ever going to have in your life is telling your children that you're getting divorced.
Mm-hmm.
One, you should do it together with your spouse. You guys need to put your differences aside enough that you have a script that you're going to tell the children. It's got to be age appropriate. Two, don't do it in their bedroom where that's their comfort spot. Do it on the couch where they play Xbox, right? Don't do it in that creepy room that our grandparents used to have with the plastic over the furniture, right? So they walk by, oh, that's what they told us. Like, just do it where it's going to be a conversation and then you move on. Three, mothers and fathers, mommies and daddies, mommies and mommies, dad and dads, never get divorced. Spouses get divorced.
Mm-hmm.
A husband and a wife will get divorced. A wife and a wife will get divorced. A husband and a husband will get divorced. When little children draw pictures of their family, the words husband and wife are nowhere on that cute little page. So whenever you talk about divorce, it's husbands and wives get divorced. We think as a husband and wife that it's better that we don't live in the same house. But as your mom and dad, we will always be there to support you. We will always be there to love you. We will never stop being your parents. We will never stop doing what we think is best for you. And right. then you talk about what they're going to want to know, what's happening next to them. That's what they're going to want to know about their children. How does this impact me? Which is frankly what most people think about. They're just hyped on it.
Absolutely.
So if you know that dad's going to move out, but you guys are going to help look for a new place with him. Or we haven't figured out where we're moving, but we're going to make sure you stay in your school with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
You talk it like that, but keep your word choices specific and take it in, let them think about it, answer their questions, and focus on them, not on your anger towards each other.
Right, right. And that's such an important distinction to be able to differentiate between mom and dad and husband and wife in that example. But I think the biggest piece to what you've touched on there towards the end is it's very hard for people, but it does happen, right? Where the differences do get in the way. And, you know, if dad has ill will towards mom because of the divorce or vice versa, it's so crucial because, I mean, I see it too, even in the clients I work with, that a lot of their feelings are being projected towards the child. And then the child is feeling like, or the children feel like they have to choose. Or, right. You know, if I'm around mom, I have to act a certain way so she doesn't get upset that, you know, I'm being friendly with dad or whatever it is, right?
Right.
How do people navigate that? Because I know it's easier said than done that, oh, you know, think about co-parenting and all of that and make sure you do these courses and parenting after divorce. But at the end of the day, we're still social and emotional beings. And, you know, you may be aware of the emotions that are coming up, but at the same time, it's hard to keep it in control, right?
It's very difficult to keep it in control. So one thing to always keep in mind is you need to love your child more than you hate your former spouse. And I use my words and choose my words carefully. I say former spouse, not ex. I think ex is derogatory. Former spouse. So things you can do to help break down those barriers in your own emotions is realizing you want your kid to be happy when they're with the other parent. Because if they're with them half the time, do you really want them to be miserable? And also, you have to set boundaries with your former spouse. That's very healthy. And we all set boundaries in our lives, even with people that we're intimate with. There's like, that's healthy. That keeps you protected. It keeps everyone protected. You also need to be flexible. And a little bit of transparency goes a long ways. And so here's the example. It's your weekend and your former spouse is working and your kid scores a goal in the soccer game. You are so excited. They are so excited. It's only a positive for you to say, oh, dad couldn't be here because he had to work. Call him or FaceTime him. Let him know. He'll be so excited to hear about this. And now the dad's at work and he picks up the phone, not expecting a phone call, and hears great news. And he knows that you're the one that initiated that. You made that happen, right? Mm-hmm. And your kid gets to tell the whole story about how the goal got scored all over again, right?
Yeah.
And so those little things go a long way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in that example, the mom, as you said, is handling the situation as she would have if the parents were together, right? So the child's not feeling any difference.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And also, if you're at the game, right, a child should never choose between their parents, even in the most minute way. Do your best to sit next to each other, because when they score the goal and they look out in the stands, they shouldn't have to search for where both parents are. They should know. And they shouldn't have to look at mom first and then dad, or dad first and then mom. Mm-hmm. And if you can't stomach it, sit in like the line of sight. Right? If you're at a play and your former spouse is sitting in row 4 center, sit in row 8 center. So when your kid looks up, you're in the line of sight. Don't make them pick. After the show, after the game, when your kid comes running off the field or down from the stage, when all the kids come back out front from behind the curtains, you can say, give your mom a hug. Mm-hmm. You're going to get your hug. You can wait a couple minutes or a couple seconds. Don't make the kid pick who they hug first.
Yeah. Yeah.
These little things have huge impacts on your child in a positive way and on your co-parenting relationship.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, just to add to that, like, and I'll get your thoughts on it too, but when you're caught up in that, whether it's resentment or bitterness towards your ex-spouse or former spouse, you lose sight of, to your point, how it's impacting the children. And we think, oh, you know, the child's going to hate the father too, or the mother, but it's not that's not always the case. In fact, what I've seen in a lot of clients is children are really disturbed, and they carry that into their adult lives because they either have animosity towards one parent or both, because as they grow older, they realize, well, why did my dad make me choose? And why did mom do this? And it really impacts the child. The child doesn't grow up and be like, oh yeah, mom was always right about dad. No, it's, they see the negativity on both ends. It's not like they're just agreeing with one parent because that's how they were conditioned. There's so many negative implications for the children, not only as they enter adolescence, or if they're already in adolescence, it does impact them as they go into adulthood. It impacts the relationships they form. And then even the way they look at the world, their worldviews completely distorted, and it's hard for them to trust other people. Not to mention the fracture in the relationship they have with the parents. But I did want to shed some light on that from seeing that as a therapist. But I don't know if you've had similar experiences, because I'm assuming a lot of the times you may have clients come back because they're seeking parental support and they're still fighting.
Oh, it's called post-judgment cases. So you have a final judgment. Your divorce is over. You have a parenting plan. You've divided up the assets and debts. You've done alimony, child support, attorney's fees and costs. You got through the horrible process.
Yeah.
And 18 months later, you're calling your lawyer because you guys aren't implementing the parenting plan, or someone isn't, and you want a motion for contempt and enforcement and attorney's fees. I truly believe that all the money people pay me to litigate over a parenting plan is, most of the time, I'm taking addiction out of the equation, yep, domestic violence out of the equation, mental health issues out of the equation. Okay. Most of the time, it will not matter in that child's life. Mm-hmm. What matters is how the parents implement the plan. You could have a perfect plan, and if it's not implemented properly, that child's going to suffer. You could have a horribly drafted parenting plan. Ambiguities, things that are unclear, things that are just vacant or missing from the document. But if the parents work well together and they can implement raising a child well together, then it doesn't matter that the plan's horrible, because they've found workarounds that work for their family by being flexible. So if you're coming back to your lawyer on a post-judgment issue, post, after judgment, final judgment, later, then yeah, you've got problems. And one of the things I do is they say, well, he's not doing X, Y, or Z. I get out the full document. I say, okay, it says you're supposed to do this. Have you done that? Like people in glass houses, right?
Yeah.
So you go through everything, and I counsel them, make sure you're doing what you're supposed to do. Be flexible when you can. Be better communicator. And I help them have steps to learn how to write an email or a text message and not be inflammatory and all those, right, just, you know, let's, if it's got to be boiling, let's get it to a simmer, not boiling over, but let's try to calm the waters in that pot.
Right, right. And based on what you're saying, a lot of the times people just need coaching around that, because again, it's emotions are involved, or you just don't know how to do that communication, because again, you're either being emotional or you just never had that experience. But what are some of the consequences then, you know, because a lot of the times people think, okay, well, the divorce is done. I've got this parenting plan. I'm getting my spousal. I'm getting my child support, whatever it is. But maybe I can abuse, quote unquote, the parenting order in place. What are some of the consequences when it comes to that?
Hurt your kid. Document's unclear. Or it says, I see this a lot, if the parent cannot agree on an extracurricular activity, either parent may sign up the child and take them on their time, but the child is not required to go to that extracurricular activity on the other parent's time. Sounds reasonable in a document. We don't agree, I'll sign them up, I'll just take them on my time. Oh, we don't agree, I'll sign them up, I'll just take them on my time, the other parent says. So they live 20 miles apart. One person doesn't want to drive the 20 miles for soccer practice or soccer games. they say, no, I'm not letting you sign them up for that. You can do it on your own time. Mm-hmm. Kid gets signed up on mom's time. Dad wants soccer closer to his house. Kid gets signed up for soccer. Kid's on two separate teams. Can never make all the practices or all the games because neither parent will take him on their other time. Mm-hmm. And sits on the bench. Never plays in a game because doesn't make the practices. Never plays in a game because he's not with the team enough to form a bond and understand how that team works, where he can fit in and be an effective contributor in the team.
For sure.
You're just hurting your kid. Get in the car, spend a little more quality time with your kid, put down your cell phone, talk about the goal they scored.
Right, right. Yeah, again, common theme here is put aside your ego, right?
Right.
And think about the child. And again, it can be very difficult for a lot of people. One of the other things I wanted to explore, and I don't know how it is in the U.S., but I do want to get your thoughts, because there is this conception that I've heard on other podcasts too, but this whole conception around, is family law favored towards women? And I know that could be controversial, but I do want to get your thoughts, because I've heard it many times, and I've also seen it here in Canada, and I've talked to other friends. But what are your thoughts when you hear that, or when people say that?
When it says favors, it depends on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, if you believe it's more favorable to have your child more, yeah, it favored the moms. In Florida, as of July 1st, 2023, there is now a presumption for 50-50 time sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to try to get over that presumption. If you think that it's best interest of the child for one parent to have more than 50-50. So that is not favorable to one parent or the other.
Right.
Presumption is even. So that's been a long time coming. In Florida, also July 1st, 2023, they changed the alimony statute where there's no longer permanent alimony. So both of those provisions can be seen as more favorable to men on the new law than it was on the old law. Because in the old law, mm-hmm. there was permanent alimony and there was no presumption. So I think across the United States, there is a huge shift in our society on what the men's role is in parenting and what the women's role is being in the workforce. Now, do you right. still have the traditional gender identity relationships where the husband works and the mother stays home? Of course. Mm-hmm. And I counsel women more about, let's think about you leaving the workforce and how does that impact you if you get divorced? Because right. if you leave the workforce at 35 or 40 and you're home for 10 to 15 years with the children and then you get divorced, you're now, you know, 45 or 50 and getting back into the workforce, and you've missed those prime years to get you to the point where in your 50s, you should be at your highest earning capacity, but mm-hmm. instead you're getting the entry level job. These are things you need to think about. And we usually discuss those if people are talking about a prenup, but no one's talking to people about that before they get married.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a huge, again, clarifying point. But just out of curiosity, because you're seeing a lot of these, or the couple of changes that you did mention in the Florida law came into effect in July of this year. What was going on prior to that? And why did it lead to these changes? I know you talked about the traditional gender roles, and we're obviously seeing
in Florida, there was a decade battle to get the permanent alimony changed. Around the country, permanent alimony had been falling by the wayside. And it was in Florida deemed to be a bit old fashioned. We needed to get up with the times, you know,
right.
things are changing. And then, you know, of course, there were a lot of men that were paying permanent alimony and they were trying to retire and they had to go back to court to stop the alimony because they're going to have less money because they're retired. So there was certainly a need for alimony reform. The old alimony law, the recipient, usually the wife, wasn't allowed to save money.
Hmm.
because you were meeting her needs, and savings was not a need under Florida law. So you were forcing them to literally live paycheck to paycheck, and that paycheck was alimony, right? So there was a lot that needed to be done. And that was kind of the historical aspect on what got changed. And the reason it switched to 50-50 is the legislature tied those two things together. They have nothing to do with one or the other. One is about kids, one is about money. But you weren't getting alimony reform unless they signed off on 50-50.
Right, right. And I guess in this case now, if I'm to understand it correctly, the default is 50-50. Now, depending on career situations or even where the parents decide to live post-separation, that could vary, and that's something they could obviously go through the courts or through the legal proceedings, but the default is 50-50.
Yeah, there's a presumption now, and the presumption to get over it is just by preponderance of the evidence. So that's the lowest presumption or the lowest burden of proof that someone has. So the highest burden of proof is in criminal law, beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yep.
Okay. But each judge is going to evaluate each case, and some are going to start like, you got to tell me something really bad for it to get over this presumption. That to me doesn't sound like preponderance of the evidence. Really bad sounds like beyond a reasonable doubt. There in between is called clear and convincing evidence. That's just not in the statute for family law. But I think each judge is going to make their own decisions, and ultimately someone's not going to agree with the judge's decision. It's going to go to the appellate court, and the appellate court's going to make some decisions telling the trial court what to do and how to implement this better than it might be being implemented on the beginning front.
Right. Well, Seth, is there anything else you feel like we haven't touched on that could be of value to the listeners when it comes to whether people are going through a divorce or they're considering getting one, or even after? Because I know we've touched on a lot of valuable information that you've been able to share. But is there anything you feel like we may not have covered yet?
Well, I would tell you about getting married. Before you get married, you need to realize you're entering into a legal contract and you don't know the terms. You do not know the terms of that contract. You don't know your state or province family law rules and what the statutes say. So educate yourself and don't be afraid of a prenup. A prenup is just a document that says what happens with the money and the assets if you get divorced. Then you're at least getting married and you're entering a contract and you know what the terms are. Otherwise, you might not know, and you might start knowing, and then the legislature might change the terms halfway through your marriage. So that would be one thing I would consider. The other thing is I would seriously have real conversations about how you're going to handle money and how you're going to communicate with your spouse. Because that's where I see major breakdowns on relationships is lack of communication and lack of transparency in conversations around money.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think one of the things around prenup, though, I agree with you. Take a hard look into that and consider it. But when I've heard conversations around people discussing prenups, it's like, well, what are you trying to say, that we're going to break up?
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a difficult conversation to have. Yeah. You're supposed to be getting married. You're supposed to be doing this. And the answer is no, I don't want to break up. But if it happens, I also don't want to go through a protracted legal battle. Mm-hmm. I want to end the relationship with mutual respect the way we're entering into this relationship, even if things went bad. Right. I do not want to be dragging this out. So let's have a conversation. It's not necessarily an easy one to have, but that goes back to how do you communicate?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think to your point, if you've built that foundation of communication early on, it could get you through a lot of the terrible, you know, you have these waves that come and hit you throughout any relationship, but if you've got that communication down, then you're able to ride those waves.
That's right. And you got to deal with that lack of communication or breakdown in communication the moment it happens.
Yep.
You can't let it just fester.
Yeah. One of the things I've realized, and I tell clients too, is resentment keeps building up, and it's not good.
That's right.
Don't deal with it right away.
That's right. And I truly believe what I'm about to tell you is that for married couples, they generally do not intentionally hurt the other. Mm-hmm. They might make a ton of bad decisions, but the way they communicate, if your spouse says something to you and it doesn't feel right, if you can pause and say, you know, that hurt, I don't think you intentionally hurt me, but here's what I heard you say, and this is how it made me feel. Is that what you meant? First off, you're being open, honest, and vulnerable. You're not attacking them for what they said. You're asking for clarification. Is that what you meant? Did I hear this the right way? And don't get into a battle about what was said, what wasn't said. That gets nowhere. You're not going to persuade the other person. We're just figuring out how to move forward here.
Yeah. And just to build on that, don't be afraid to get help, right? Doesn't always have to be therapy, but I mean, therapy is a great option if you're finding that maybe you both want to communicate and you just can't get over that hump where neither one of you can hear each other or see each other. That's where counseling or therapy can help, because then you can have a third person that's objective and neutral help you navigate those waters. And a lot of times that's what it takes, is perhaps just getting those skills or having someone just notice where both of you are falling short.
And communication is a skill set. Mm-hmm. We teach our kids very early. Say please, say thank you. That's part of communication, right? Yes. At its most basic level. But it gets much more complicated when you're talking about more complex situations and you're juggling and, you know, you got the kids or they're working really hard trying to, you know, support you. And but ultimately, if you're not spending quality time with your spouse laughing, there's probably a problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, even with kids, it complicates things a little bit further, because you have to think about it, you know, as a couple, you're both different people. You've had different life experiences, different upbringings. You come from, who knows, different parts of the world. So you're both going to bring all those differences into the relationship. You have to be able to navigate those. And a lot of the times those differences get magnified when you're trying to parent your children or raise them the way you think they should be raised. And there's a lot of friction there. And to your point, that communication is so important. And
what people don't realize about that friction is kids do better when there's not conflict. Mm-hmm. So is the point that you're arguing, is the friction worth the risk of hurting your child? No matter which side is right or wrong, or we're going to do it this way or that way, the argument about it is what's most damaging to your child.
Correct.
And to your point on magnification, going through a divorce, people's personalities are magnified. Yeah. If you're anxious by nature, super anxious during a divorce. If you watch every dime, you're watching every penny.
Yeah.
And the decisions being made in a divorce feel like they are massive. Mm-hmm. In reality, they're not.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you, Seth, for all of that and your insight. Really appreciate it. I know you mentioned your podcast, but what are some other ways the listeners can find your work or check out the podcast or even get in touch with you if they wanted to?
So go to the website. It's NelsonLG.com. That is NelsonLG.com. Or you can just Google how to split a toaster, or wherever you download and listen to your podcast. We're on all of those sites and streaming services. And take care of yourself. Hopefully you don't have to call me.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for checking out this episode with Seth. As always, please leave a 5-star review or a sentence in the comment section. I always love hearing from you. And if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do so on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That's the best and easiest way to support the podcast. Thank you again, and until next week.